Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bruce Levine is going to be in the dugout. Grounder to short. This could do it. The throw to first. And the Cubs win the ball game. 6-3 on the putout. The Cubs win it by a score of 6-0. And there will be a game 5 Saturday night in Milwaukee between these two teams.
Highlight of Game 4's end, the enchanted intonations of the Hall of Famer Pat Hughes, brought to you by The Score. That's us, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage. Thank you for joining me. And we are on the precipice of Game 5, win or die. And your starting pitcher, Russ Dorsey of Yahoo Sports and Friday Night Baseball on Apple Plus, left-hander Drew Pomeranz. Your thoughts?
You know, Steve, and thank you for having me on, man. By the way, precipice, and you appreciate this as a writer, precipice is one of my favorite words to use in a story.
We're on the precipice of a tremendous interview in which I give you a garage band name by the end of this. So you keep going.
There we go.
Yeah.
Drew Pomeranz. Listen, man, I understand it completely, and I think this was something that I was watching what the Cubs would do because I saw what happened to Shota Imanaga in Game 2 at American Family Field, and it was not good. You're talking about a guy that's allowed a home run in 11 consecutive starts going back to the regular season, and with your playoff life on the line, I can understand why you go with Drew Pomeranz and just go all hands on deck, everybody grab an inning and see what you got at the end of the game.
Russ Dorsey is my guest. You can read him MLB Insider or Yahoo Sports. And like I said, Friday Night Baseball, Apple TV Plus, and a Score regular here for the midday show. And in talking about the Cubs got to this point, I ran down a list of statistics that stunned me about how everything favors the Cubs tonight. Teams that fight back from down. You lose the first two games on the road, and you come back and you force Game 5. You're going to win. You're 10-7. The team that forced Game 5 is 10-7. Last 17 times that's happened. And the teams that get to Game 5 after losing the first two on the road, the five times it's happened, three of the teams that were down 0-2 win those games. There's a bunch of stuff that favors the Cubs. Who do you favor?
You know, see, it's interesting because I've seen two different versions of both of these teams in the series. Like the first two games of the series, I saw a Cubs team that looked like they wanted to go home and they were on the verge of being swept. Milwaukee looked like the better team. They pitched better. They hit better. Craig Council was being outmanaged by Pat Murphy. The environment looked like everything swung the Brewers' way. And then you drive 90 minutes south, you're playing at Wrigley Field, and I wrote after Game 4 that Wrigley Field was the 10th man on the field because you got the fans chanting Freddie and give up the home run to Ian Happ, and then it just looked like they were a team. They're the youngest team left in the postseason, and it looked like it in Games 3 and 4. And so when you ask me what's going to happen tonight, Steve, I feel like the team that has the home field advantage has had the edge in this series. And in my NLDS prediction, my prediction was Brewers in five games, and I'm going to stick with that, even though the Cubs have proven me wrong this entire postseason. Like, I didn't think they'd get to this point. I didn't think they were built for that. And to their credit, they've given themselves a true shot in game five.
My guest is Russ Dorsey, YahooSports.com, MLB insider for YahooSports.com. He's part of Apple TV Plus's Friday Night Baseball. He's a regular here on The Score with the Midday Show, talking Cubs and Cubs and Brewers Game 5 in what have some have dubbed Wrigley Field North. Now, if you're a Brewers fan, you know how this ends. You've seen this movie before. The Brewers have a great regular season and then lose the first series they play. They've not won a playoff series since 2018, despite making the playoffs in almost every year except one since then. So they do this thing, and they're not built for the playoffs. If the theme of the playoffs is ball go far, team go far, it's Brewersing. That's what they're doing. And with a young team, it's hard to see how that gets reversed. I see a lot of more poised players on the Cubs. How do you see the Brewers overcoming that?
They have to play their game, Steve, right? Like, I think in the postseason, and we saw it in the Tigers-Mariners game last night in that marathon, how can you scrap together three or four runs knowing that you have these nasty arms in your bullpen that can strike out everybody in the ballpark? All that's great, but if you can't push more runs across than the other team, that doesn't really matter. And I think for the Brewers, they play the postseason game all season long, right? Like, they're not hitting some switch like other teams are doing and saying, okay, now we have to manufacture runs. That's just the way they do things. But I don't want people to get fooled by the Brewers, because I've watched this team a lot this year. I've covered this team a lot this year. They have guys that are some of the most talented players in Major League Baseball. Like, Jackson Churio is going to be a name that you hear for a long time in the big leagues. William Contreras is one of the best catchers in Major League Baseball. Christian Yelich is having his best year since he was an MVP runner-up in 2019. And so, like, I don't want people to think that just because the Cubs got some of that momentum back in Game 3 and 4 that this series is now over. Like, that crowd, that environment that we talk about, it was an 85-15 split in Game 1 and 2 up here in Milwaukee. Like, that whole Wrigley North thing did not exist in the first two games of this series, and it won't exist tonight. And so I think that's going to play a big factor. But I think for the Brewers, they're going to have to slug a little bit tonight. I'm not saying they got to hit four, five, six home runs, but I think that you got to get one, right? And maybe it's one of those three-run homers that they had in the second game of the series in Game 2 against Shota Imanaga. If you can do that and you can slug and you can keep the Cubs from slugging, I think they have a good opportunity in this game tonight.
So then who would you start in the first inning, knowing the Cubs have done so much damage in the first inning? You're Pat Murphy. You have your pocket pancake. Who would be your starting pitcher and why?
So I tweeted this morning that I personally would start Jose Quintana and dare Craig Counsell to start Michael Bush left on left. Like, the Cubs have proven that they don't like that matchup for Michael Bush. And so if I'm Pat Murphy, if the key to success is, can I get Michael Bush to have the fewest at-bats as possible? If you want to run out Justin Turner in the first and third inning, please be my guest. Because if Justin Turner beats me, I'm cool with that. But what I won't be cool with is the Cubs' best hitter so far this postseason in Michael Bush hitting another home run and then feeling like I could have done something about that. So I would start Jose Quintana, let him go two, three innings if he's pitching well, and then give it to Jacob Mizorowski in the third. That would be the route I would go. But on the other side, Steve, if I'm Craig Counsell, I'm starting Michael Bush whether they go left on left or not, because what I won't do is go down without having my best hitter in the lineup. And we saw last night in that Tigers-Mariners game, Terry Carpenter hitting against a left-hander. A.J. Hinch had to leave him in there, and he comes up with a huge swing in that game last night. So I'm in on having Michael Bush start even if the Brewers start Jose Quintana.
Make the argument for the Brewers starting Mizorowski and throwing 104.5, the FM station of fireballers everywhere. He's throwing that fast in the first inning and daring the Cubs to just get a bat around. There seems to be a good argument to be made for that.
Yeah, I mean, look, he is definitely maybe he's probably the most electric arm on either side in this series. And so having that guy, we saw what having that can do for you. We saw how good he was in game two in Milwaukee. I think that would be something, because that's a guy who's going to pitch maybe 3-4 innings for you and get you to your high leverage guys in the back end. I don't hate that idea. My only thing against that is, as a rookie starting pitcher who is very emotional, I'm always curious of how guys handle that adrenaline in the first inning for a guy that young. Like, let him come into a game, you know, maybe you have a 1-0, 2-0 lead, 2-1 lead, and then like kind of let him cruise through that third, fourth, fifth inning to get you to the back end, as opposed to maybe his emotions are a little bit too high in that first inning, lose command of that big fastball, and now you're in a bad situation in the first.
Well, maybe you don't tell him ahead of time. Maybe you wait as long. I mean, we've seen managers do that with emotional pitchers who do exactly what you say. They get so amped up. Like Ben Brown, wasn't he one of those guys you never wanted to tell until the last minute? And that's what he's all got, all that stuff. But there's some managers who have done that. I didn't want him to know, so I'm not going to say anything to anybody. And then I'm going to tap him on the shoulder and go over the boards, and you're taking the next shift, kid. That kind of stuff.
We're going to have to find out here, and I would say the next 90 minutes or so. So somebody's getting that text message soon, whether it's Jose Quintana or Jacob Mizorowski. But I think this is why postseason baseball is fun, Steve. Like, the chess match and deciding what matchups you're going to go with, deciding if you're going to trust your gut, or you're going to trust the analytics and the metrics. I think that it makes for great theater, and it's going to make for a great atmosphere tonight in this game, in what I believe will be a close contest.
I'm not sure, given all the buildup. I'm not sure. But what did you make?
You think somebody gets run out the building?
I do think so. I do think that there's okay. This seems like a 1-3 run homer. I just feel 1-3 run homer, and suddenly somebody's going to exhale and go, argh! And then, you know, like when a pitcher finally gives up a hit and he's got a no hitter for 8 innings, and then you can see him giving up 7 runs or giving up a bunch of hits. I will say
3 runs, that does feel like the number in this series, where it's like, okay, nobody, the other team will not score 3 runs.
Come back on you. Yeah.
Right. Like, the closest we had was in game 3, Cubs put up 4 runs, and then, you know, the Brewers put up 3, and I made the argument in that game, like, they shouldn't have laid down a bunt in the fourth inning. You give your guy a chance to swing the bat, move a runner over, and get him in. But yeah, like, at that 3-run marker, you might be on to something, because it does feel like a much larger lead if somebody gets the 3 runs first.
I have one question. I want to get back to the way Wrigley played, or sounded. Yeah. The way Wrigley sounded and what it did, and the Cub fans chanting, Freddie, and it makes me wonder if there'll be enough Cub fans buying Brewers tickets to be chanting Jacob, or Jose, former Cub Jose Quintana, and I wonder if the Cubs can get a taunting chant there. But what happened Thursday in Wrigley, maybe Wednesday and Thursday, Thursday most notably, would have registered on the Richter scale had it been around in Wrigleyville. Pat Murphy, you know, he basically said his guys piddled down their legs. They got scared. They were intimidated. And he was begging, seemingly begging for fans. We'll play it later on this hour. Brewer fans to act like Cub fans. Were you surprised when you heard this kind of stuff?
No. I think Pat Murphy has watched a lot of baseball. I think he saw how the Brewers home crowd kind of did the same thing for them in game 1 and 2. And like, look, I've watched a lot of games at American Family Field, Miller Park, whatever you want to call it these days. And it is usually a 50-50, 60-40 split. with Cubs fans. In those first two games, it was unlike what I have ever seen in a Brewers-Cubs matchup where it was 80-plus percent Brewers fans. And so I think it's just, hey, bring that same energy. You saw what happened to us when we didn't have that, you know, in those two games in Chicago. We need that in a winner-take-all game five. Like, I don't necessarily see it as, hey, be like Cubs fans. I see it as, hey, if you want us to get to the next round, continue to do what you did in the first two games of the series because you saw how we played when we had you behind our back.
Okay, Russ, I have a garage band name for you. I thought it would be Russ and the Buff Delts. I think that would be
your I don't hate it, Steve.
Garage. And since Justin Turner, who looks like a runaway from ZZ Top, he might be available next week. He could sit in on your sessions.
Maybe we'll have I got to see if Justin Turner is a drummer or can play the bass. Like, we need to work on that.
Well, we've seen it. He can't play the bass. He can't play any bass. He's not allowed to be out there. Russ, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Enjoy tonight. Russ Dorsey, Yahoo Sports. MLB Insider for Yahoo Sports. Friday Night Baseball on Apple Plus. And Game 5. Cubs, Brewers, win or die tonight. Russ, by the way, joined me on the Circa Resort Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Take a break and change channels. Well, not change channels. It's still the score. It's still Saturday Suckage. We will talk some football. We'll talk some Bears. Bears, Commanders, turning to the scene of the greatest embarrassment, or, as football coaches say, the greatest teaching tape one might have. We'll talk with Herb Howard of the Bigs, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All day Monday.
Ready to share who your left tackle is going to be. I'm just curious if maybe you are today.
Yeah, it'll be Theo. Okay.
Oh, look at that. Oh, man. Thanks, Ben.
Go Cubs.
Welcome in. Welcome back. Ben Johnson. Remember him? He's your coach of your Bears. Remember when he was the big deal in town before the Cubs took over everything and swallowed every bit of oxygen? Ben Johnson, Theo Benedet is your starting left tackle from University of British Columbia, right? One of the engineers out there and not too far away from Whistler, which I will never forget is one of the most powerful hot outposts in the world. It's the strength of Whistler's weed in British Columbia was enough to get a snowboarder that cost him his gold medal for a little while because they thought he was on marijuana. They thought he tested positive, which, like, who cares? It's not performance enhancing. It just makes you want to binge eat.
Smoke weed every day.
We will talk. We will have an actual WBC meeting later on with a Hall of Famer, somebody whose face and beard would be on the Mount Cushmore. But that's not why you called. Here's why you called. That was Ben Johnson talking about Bears. Bears, Commanders, playing in Washington on Monday night. Now joining me on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline, Herb Howard of the Bigs, Download the Circa app today. Herb, thanks for taking time this afternoon. I appreciate it.
No problem, Steve. How you feeling, man?
I'm doing pretty groovy. I could be bitching by the, you know what? By the end of Monday night, we could all be pretty bitching if the Cubs are playing game one against the Doyers and the Bears avenge the whole mess that was created last year that began with Tyreek Stevenson and ended with coaches getting fired and a 10-game losing streak. And this is such, I love this. We do this as writers and reporters. We tell this kind of story. We love this kind of hook. But the talent involved, if you were to evaluate it, however you evaluate it, these two teams, don't you think this is central towards gauging Bears' progress? And if so, where? Where would you look for it? How would you gauge it?
Yeah, I think 100%. I mean, even if you throw away, you know, the storylines about last year, just look at what's happening this year and, you know, where the Bears are or where they think they may be. I think this is a pretty good test to find out if that's true or not. Obviously, they start 0-2, two division games, which you never want to do. But then they find a way to bounce back. They get a good win against the Cowboys at home, and then they go out and, you know, find a way to win out in Vegas. And now they're at 2-2 and looking to get above 500 against a team that has legitimate aspirations to get back to the conference championship game. And so I think you look at some of the matchups that they have, you talk about the weapons on the offensive side of the ball for the Commanders. And obviously that starts with Jaden Daniels, who's going to be back for a second week in a row after he was injured. But you look at Terry McLaurin and Deebo Samuel and these guys that they're able to deploy, and it's a good test for this Bears defense. They have not been able to stop the run at any point this season. Commanders got a pretty good running game going right now that includes their running back and their quarterback. And I think it's important for the Bears to start getting healthy coming off this bye. They get T.J. Edwards back. They get Kyler Gordon back. And so the hope for them is that, you know, they can kind of establish themselves defensively in terms of how they can stop the run. And they got to look at what they can do versus the pass. Actually, they've been banged up there too. Obviously, Jalen Johnson just talked about Kyler Gordon. Tyreek Stevenson has played two really, really good games, and now he's got a matchup against Terry McLaurin. I'm sure they're going to try to scheme him, get some one-on-one matchups, and we'll see how they go about trying to attack them in that way. But I think it certainly creates a good opportunity for the Bears to say either we are or we are not improving and ascending. Like, maybe we just beat two bad football teams and we escape with a field goal block or whatever. They've had 8 takeaways in the last 2 weeks. I don't know how sustainable that is. And you get 4 takeaways in Vegas and you still win by 1 point on the field goal block. And so you're trying to figure out, okay, is this thing real? Are we actually going the right way or not? I think this would be a good test to find out.
Wow. Boy, when you put it that happily. Herb Howard is my guest. Herb Howard of the Bigs. We're talking Bears football, Bears, Commanders. So run down where the Bears have an advantage over the Commanders on Monday night.
Good question. I think you look at the Bears offensively, I think their weapon, I think they have a pretty good matchup on that side of the ball. And if Caleb can, you know, dissect the defense pre-snap, post-snap, get the ball out of his hands quickly and get it to his playmakers. You talk about Roma Dunze scoring a touchdown in every game so far this season. I think that has a pretty good opportunity to continue to move DJ Moore around, continue to bring Luther Burden along. You get Colston Loveland back this week. And so I think that creates an opportunity for the Bears to design some mismatches in their passing game. But I think they also have to be able to establish at least a threat of the running game. So continue to run the ball consistently, whether it's hitting for 5 or 6 or not. Maybe it's hitting for 2 or 3, but you got to have that threat in there so you can utilize the play-action game, run pass options. Like, those are the things they have to be able to set up and establish. But I think if they can do that, I like their matchups on the outside.
Ben Johnson announced Theo Bennett's starting left tackle. What difference does that make to you, Herb?
Not a lot right now. I think, you know, honestly, I think he's just trying to figure out, you know, how can I get somebody out there who doesn't piss me off when I watch the tape back? And I think he's been trying to figure that out since training camp. And he's been open and honest about it that, you know, nobody's taking the job and run with it. And he said, you know, going back into the summer that this thing could go well into the season. He said he'd go to the bye week. He said he'd go past the bye week. And now here we are past the bye week, and they're still trying to figure out if they can get sufficient left tackle play. And so I'm not knocking Theo Benedict and him earning the opportunity to, you know, be seriously considered as a starting left tackle in this league. but I think it's come as a bit more of a default than it is like, oh, we just feel really, really great about Theo. I think they're just trying to find out how they can get, you know, above par play at the position. I don't think that Coach Johnson has been satisfied with it to this point. And so we'll see what that looks like and how much help they have to give him in terms of chips or double teams. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this thing flips back and forth, you know, again in the coming weeks and we see Braxton back in there or some other combination.
Whatever happened to Montez Sweat?
Very good question. I mean, he came over. Everybody was really, really excited. He led two teams in sacks that first year, the Commanders and the Bears. And, you know, the hope was that he would continue to ascend and continue to make explosive, dynamic, game-changing plays and be a consistent pass rusher. But you talk about all the time these defensive line coaches, they're always talking about, you know, it's four guys together. And I just don't think they've gotten to the point yet where they have four guys rushing together that can complement each other. I think that Montez Sweat still has the capability of being a difference maker, a game wrecker in any given week. But I don't know that they've put it all together. I don't know if they're getting enough from the opposite side. They obviously go out and sign Dayo Odenbo. We haven't really seen him flash at all to this point. And I think, you know, it all has to come together for them to be able to do that. And so certainly you want more out of Montez Sweat. He's got to play a little bit better. He's got to take advantage of the opportunities when he gets them. But I think it's a bit of a collective from the defensive line. We'll see if Austin Booker can add something to the pass rush with him coming back. He had a really good preseason. We've seen that before from him. So hopefully that can translate, you know, into some production on Sundays in the regular season. But right now, they just aren't getting anything from the pass rush. And you certainly look to number 98 to be the first person to kind of change that.
We were told he was the multiplier. And the question from Washington was, were other guys a multiplier? He benefited by that. And we were told he was that guy. And there were 98 million reasons why that we should believe the Bears when they told us that. And he shouldn't be this anonymous.
And no, I agree with you. I mean, the price tag says it all. Like, this should be a difference-making guy, somebody who offensive coordinators worry and stay up at night trying to figure out how we're going to deal with number 98. We have to identify him every single play. We have to have a plan for him every single down. It's what you see from Max Crosby. It's what we saw out there in Vegas, where every single down, if you do not have a game plan for him, he is going to destroy this play. And that's the type of player that you want when you talk about making that kind of investment, when you talk about making that kind of trade. And so it has not been the case. It has not been the case. I'm not looking to make any excuses for Montez Sweat. We know he was banged up last year. He played through some tough injuries, and we appreciate that. But we got to see the production. And I think, you know, we certainly since that first season when he came over here, we haven't really seen him play at that level.
My guess is Herb Howard of the Bigs. We're talking Bears, Commanders here. They play Monday night. And maybe help me out with this. 3 years ago, if I have my timeline correct, and that's always a question, Cole Kmet, in my world, was one of the top 10 tight ends. He had a lot. He had catch, clutch. He could make the play downfield. He was a favorite target. He could be a favorite target. He was that guy, that kind of tight end we saw blossoming. And since then, coaching changes, offensive coordinator changes. Like, does nobody recognize this? Has he regressed, or he's been forced into a regression by bad, crazy coaching? The Cole Kmet thing baffles me. As close as he was to being a feared weapon.
Yeah, it's one of the toughest things to figure out when you kind of evaluate the individual players on the Bears roster, because Cole Kmet does have a very unique skill set. I mean, he's got the size. You stand next to him, he is a large human being. He's athletic. He can catch the ball. He can get down the field, create mismatches for you. It seems like he could be that complete tight end that you're looking for at the NFL level. The Bears obviously thought so at one point, extended him, gave him the contract. And since then, his usage has dropped steadily. And it's kind of mind-boggling to figure out why, because it's not like he doesn't have the same skill set. It's not like he's suffered some, you know, traumatic injury and he's not the same player anymore. When he is utilized, you can still see the same skill set. He just isn't utilizing that way for one reason or another. And I don't know what all goes into that. So I'm not saying they're just not scheming things up for him or designing things for him, or I don't know if they're seeing something different where he's not winning his one-on-ones. We have seen some mental errors from him this year, you know, going back through summer and even into the regular season, some of the pre-snap penalties. You're hearing number 85 called a lot, and that certainly can get under a coach's skin as well. But you got a guy who should be able to help you create mismatches in the passing game, and for whatever reason, that just has not been the case. I mean, he has, what was it, 7 touchdowns in 23, and now he's like, just like, that's just not the player that you're seeing from him anymore. And so I think they got to find a way to utilize him. They talk about the 12 personnel and how often Coach Johnson likes to use that. They draft Colston Love, and then you think, okay, these two guys should be able to create some mismatch nightmares in the middle of the field on linebackers and things. Hasn't kind of come to fruition just yet, but I still believe that Cole Kmet could be a really good player for you in this offense, and I hope they find a way to kind of unlock that.
Interesting with the game in Washington, with what happened last year, didn't really involve any part of DJ Moore. It involved a great last, you know, couple-minute drive by Caleb Williams that would have made him a hero. One of several drives that would turn out to be badly coached out of a victory. And the DJ Moore game, when Justin Fields had moments and, oh, you're going to single cover him? We're going to find him. All that kind of stuff. DJ Moore went through a time last year where you'd mentioned Roma Dunze and how the connection with Caleb Williams is big and strong, and he's Neo. He's the force is strong with this one. And then DJ Moore sounded, looked, acted grumpy. It wasn't the DJ Moore show. However, this week, stuff I heard this week, he sounded cheery, chirpy. What's your take on this? Is there a metamorphosis of DJ Moore? Is he happier at this point? He's not being featured as much. His numbers aren't as big. I'm trying to get a handle on that. What's your handle on this, on DJ Moore, Herb?
Yeah, I think there was definitely an adjustment period for DJ in the 24th season in terms of, you know, how he was or was not being used, how his relationship was or was not developing on and off the field with Caleb Williams, and their on-field chemistry suffered for it. And I think you were able to see some of that frustration, I think, this year coming into it. I don't know if it's just, you know, being more content with what his role is in Ben Johnson's offense, or if it's another year of getting to know Caleb. But DJ seems like his normal, happy self, right? And you start to see the relationship between some of these guys develop. You can see it in the locker room just in terms of how he interacts with Caleb now versus maybe how it was before. And I think DJ and Rome, they've developed a really close relationship. You see them together all the time now. And so I know Coach Johnson's moving him around and putting him in the backfield and putting him in the slot and outside and just trying to find ways to keep him involved in the offense. And I think so far he seems to be content with that. Obviously, you know, Rome Odunze is Caleb's number one target. That's where he's looking for when he gets in trouble. That's where he's looking to, you know, early and often. But I think that DJ Moore remains a critical component of what they want to do offensively, and he seems to be happy with his role and content with what he does. And I think the Bears, as a coaching staff, they still understand that he's a very dangerous weapon. And when you get the ball in his hands, he's very, very tough to bring down, and they continue to find ways to try and get him the ball.
All right, the verbal whiteboarding. Thank you very much. Thanks very much, Herb. We appreciate your time. Thanks for the acumen. And I suspect you'll have a very entertaining game to write about Monday night.
Should be a good game. Should be a good game. It's a great opportunity for the Bears to kind of establish themselves. All of a sudden, you look up at this schedule that seems so tough, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Now it doesn't look quite as tough. You look at what's happening out there in Baltimore, what's going on in Philly, and it's like, what's going on in Cincinnati, and all these are three road games that you looked at earlier and said, well, I don't know how the Bears can go there and find a win. Now those teams don't look as – those tasks don't look as daunting. And, you know, if the Bears can get themselves a win, get to 3-2, then you start to, you know, hypothesize about what this back end of the season could look like if they move into, you know, the second, third of it or whatever. If they can get this win, that would be a really, really good start.
They could win the World Series, I think, if they get this win. That's what history shows us. Herb, thanks for your time.
Go Bears, go.
And Cubs. All right, thanks, Herb. Appreciate it.
Right,
Herb Howard of the Bigs. Great stuff. Speaking of football, by the way, listen to this. Join Coach Dave Wannstedt and Chris Tannehill live at Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, Michigan for the Four Winds football forecast tomorrow. The event is free to the public and starts at 5:30 Eastern, 4:30 Central. Wani will be giving an early season review and forecast the rest of the season. Plus, you can get an autograph and photo with Coach Wannstedt before the Sunday night game. That's tomorrow. Four Winds Casino, New Buffalo, Michigan. Take a break. We come back. Take a break when we come back. Celebrity, the cultural zeitgeist is an anniversary of what, on this radio station, would seem to be an all-time favorite movie. So, stuff about that. Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Bears.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Dear Red, if you're reading this, you've gotten out. And if you've come this far, maybe you're willing to come a little further. You remember the name of the town, don't you?
Zihuatanejo.
I could use a good man to help me get my project on wheels. I'll keep an eye out for you and the chessboard ready. Remember, Red, hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things. And no good thing ever dies. I will be hoping that this letter finds you, and finds you well. Your friend, Andy.
Nice! Shawshank Redemption came out 31 years ago. Had an anniversary. And it's a favorite of this radio station, people on the air, people listening. In 1984, that's how far back this thing goes, Frank Darabont adapted Stephen King's The Woman in the Room. Stephen King would allow student filmmakers to buy rights to a novel or novella or whatever he's doing for a dollar, and they could make a movie out of it. So King agreed. King liked what Darabont did for the dollar, and King agreed to sell him the rights to his prison novella titled Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption. Stephen King sold that novella to a filmmaker for $5,000. Could you imagine being a director, a filmmaker, a producer, and Stephen King, anything he writes? $5,000? Come on. Run with it. Darabont completed a screenplay, and he just called it The Shawshank Redemption. And Rob Reiner wanted it. They won the bidding war to sign on to produce it. And Rob Reiner had already directed two Stephen King adaptations. Stand By Me. I love that. Stand By Me. Want to see a dead body? And look at the Milwaukee Brewers. Oh, look at that. And Misery. So whenever it was, late 80s, early 90s, Rob Reiner offered Frank Darabont $2.5 million to step away and allow Rob Reiner himself to direct. $2.5 million was a lot of money back then. Parents, tell your kids. Darabont refused. He said, no. This was my chance to do something great, Darabont said. And he refused to sell his script unless he was given the chance to direct it too. Ultimately, Columbia Pictures struck a deal. Darabont took a pay cut to get the gig. He bet on himself. Like that. Andy Dufresne, we heard him coming in. When Rob Reiner was interested in the script, Trash Panda, I know you think it's a great movie. Who do you think would be playing Andy Dufresne if Rob Reiner had been able to direct it?
Ooh, so this is the mid-80s, right? When did the movie come out?
Later, 31 years ago.
31 years, so late, 90s.
Early, yeah, so right. late 80s, early 90s casting.
Let me think here.
This is a Rob Reiner. He's Rob Reiner, and you're not.
Michael Keaton.
Tom Cruise.
Damn.
It's hard to imagine Tom Cruise as Andy Dufresne, but also, and then when Rob Reiner pulled out because he couldn't buy off Frank Darabont, Cruise backed out too. They considered Jeff Bridges, I mean, the Big Lebowski being Andy Dufresne, consider Kevin Costner, Nicolas Cage. That would have been a thing.
I could have seen Jeff Bridges. I could have seen. I could see that. But these other guys, no.
Darabont wanted Tom Hanks.
That probably would have worked too.
And he would have had him, but not for a film called Forrest Gump.
I think no wrong choice there. Tom had two good choices there.
And his next stop was Tim Robbins. That was his next choice, Tim Robbins. That's a good call. So Robbins did some prep for the role. Andy spends a lot of time in the hole. Robbins did his research by spending time locked away in solitary confinement before production began. Now that's method acting, mister. That is some kind of method acting. He also interacts with a bird, Jake, the pet librarian of Brooks, right? And what a wonderful but sad character Brooks is. Anyways, Jake is the bird. Robbins spent time with the bird so he could predict when it was going to squawk. He was rehearsing with the bird so he could talk his lines around Jake's squawking.
If you put that much effort into that role, how much time do you think Tim Robbins put into his cameo in Anchorman?
I'm assume a year, I would guess.
Minimum.
So Ellis Boyd Redding, right? That's Red. Darabont wanted the part to have whatever is gravitas and a Hollywood name. So he considered Clint Eastwood, Harrison Ford, Paul Newman, Robert Redford. Like, I'm not throwing away my shot. That's what he's doing. Why not, right? You shoot your shot, babe. That's it. You can't be told no by better people. So if they say no, you just go on.
Who do you think for this role? Han Solo, Indiana Jones, you know, that guy.
So he settled on Sidney Poitier. Poitier said no. He thought portraying a convicted murderer didn't do a lot to further the image of a black man in Hollywood.
I kind of get it.
So here comes Morgan Freeman. An authoritative presence, Darabont called him. Not what you imagined if you read the book, if you read the novella. Because Red is a white Irishman with red hair, hence the name Red.
I don't know if they could have gotten any further away from
yes.
There is white Irish guy with red hair to black man
Morgan Freeman,
but black man.
There's a nod to the original character in the film to the book. Andy says, "Why did they call you Red?" And Morgan Freeman says, "Maybe because I'm Irish."
The music. See, I didn't know that. I always thought that was just a joke that he did.
No, that's why. It was a nod to that. Now insider stuff for Shawshank Redemption. The music was composed by Thomas Newman. And like another composer I know, John Williams, he was not keen on the deal at first. When he saw the first cut of the film, he liked the film so much, he said to Darabont, "I can only make this worse." A music guy. I can only make this worse. And Darabont admitted that, you know, you have Red narrating, here's what happened, right? He blatantly stole that from Goodfellas and Henry Hill, Ray Liotta's narration. That's what he watched Goodfellas apparently every Sunday night. And that's what that part of the storytelling, how the story got told. Now, you remember there's a baseball scene in there, right? That scene took 9 hours to shoot.
The scene where they're throwing the baseball back and
forth? When Andy and Red meet. Yeah. Red's playing baseball. Scene took 9 hours to shoot. Morgan Freeman was pitching all day long. Darabont said he did not complain, but he turned up the next day with his arm in a sling, pitching for 9 hours. You see, prisons just don't have much in a bullpen. That's all I could think of. That's right.
Just the one guy.
So one of the more dramatic scenes or recurring scenes is Morgan Freeman as Red going in front of the parole board. And there's a cut of them together. And then you get to the final hearing. And we can't really play it. We could edit out the naughty word. But as he tells them, you just go write down your little questions, your little book, and whatever. And he delivered something that was something different from all the I'm so rehabilitated. And he called that the finest acting job he ever delivered. That piece, that parole piece at the end. And by the way, the picture on the parole forms, that's his son. That's his son, not a younger version. This final note on Shawshank Redemption. Remember I said Stephen King sold the story to Darabont for $5,000. King never cashed the check. King apparently was so pleased with the film, he had the check framed and mailed back to Darabont with a note saying, in case you ever need bail money, love, Steve.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. Shawshank Redemption, 31 years ago, an all-time favorite movie, all-time great. Take a break. When we come back, Pat Murphy and Wrigley Field and his Brewers piddling down their legs. We need to explore that, and I'll bring that to you after this. Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.